Welcome back to the Blues on Parade podcast, where all we do is talk Chelsea and talk shit about everyone else. Man, it is never, ever a dull day as a Chelsea fan. Continuous drama, day after day. You know, surprise, recurring guests out of nowhere. I mean, it really is just like a TV sitcom, I feel like, at this point. Obviously, last episode, we talked about Graham Potter sacking, and out of nowhere, we just had to have a whole episode talking about Frank Lampard getting hired as the caretaker manager. Who would have thought? Andreas, initial reaction to the news?
Baffled. Completely dumbfounded. I don't know what other synonym for confusion there is out there, but open to learning new SAT words.
I think you nailed the main ones, Zach.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I keep flip-flopping and saying this is a good thing and this is a not so good thing and this is a meh kind of thing. I don't really know how to feel right now. I'll just kind of leave it at that for now.
When the news initially came out that it was a possibility, I thought it was like kind of nonsense and, you know, focusing more on the long-term solution. The only thing I said was, I just hope that this whole Frank caretaker thing doesn't happen. And like a couple hours later, it's pretty much official. I mean, we haven't seen an official club statement yet, but it's a done deal. Frank Lampard is coming in until June to take care of the squad while Chelsea completes an exhaustive search for their next manager. Oh, and this is coming off the heels of a pretty disappointing 0-0 draw, where we were against Liverpool, where we were by far the better team, had way more chances, 2 disallowed goals. But just like the last 3 times that Chelsea and Liverpool played, ended in a 0-0 draw. It was a pretty underwhelming match, I think, for most of it. But you know, the 0 goals scored, I think the main talking point's gotta be Kai Havertz. It was probably one of his most embarrassing performances, I'd say. 4 shots, 4 big chances missed. I guess, you know, it's hard. It's not really worth it to go over this match that much because we had Bruno in charge, and now we're maybe going to see a completely new team coming moving forward. So I guess we can just, you know, give off some positives without, you know, harping too hard on the negatives that we all already know stem from our lack of finishing. Kai Havertz is our leading scorer in the Premier League, by the way. That's absurd.
He's also our leading misser.
he's both.
Those usually go hand in hand, though, to be fair.
I know, but in this case, it's an insult.
Yeah, the ratio of missed
goals.
I
wonder how high up he is on that list. Like, he's got to be probably second to, like, Haaland.
I mean, he's missed the most big chances in our squad, for sure. But
easily.
In terms of the Premier League, I would say he's up there with, like, Bamford, Haaland, and, like, I don't know, probably Darwin.
I'm looking
Nunes
this up right
somebody.
Now.
Yeah, I'm curious. But anyways,
right,
I mean,
Haaland is number 1 with 20. Kai Havertz is 5 with 13.
13 big chances missed?
Yeah.
I mean, that's more big chances missed than big chances scored, for sure.
It's twice as many. It's twice as many goals.
Good Lord. He is 33% at hitting a cow. Like this is my problem with him. It's like, how could you be so bad at finishing? How does your composure so shit? Like, that's something that can be worked on.
Well, apparently he eats Skittles at halftime, but he needed a nutritionist to tell him he shouldn't be doing that.
And then he fired the nutritionist because he wanted to revert back to eating Skittles. That's insane.
I mean, the drop off in some of his second half performances make a lot of sense if he's counting down fucking straight sugar at halftime. This guy's crashing by the 70th minute. He's like a 4-year-old on a sugar high. This is ridiculous. Really is. Like, this is one of those things, and I hate to kind of like harp on it, but it's so unprofessional to even say that in an interview. Like, even if it's true, like, why are you saying
that? Right. It's like, just like
the situational awareness is non-existent.
It's like, when did athletes like who are supposed to be the next big thing suddenly, like, you know, if you're supposed to like aim at being a top 3 player in the world, shouldn't you emulate what Messi and Ronaldo did to succeed? But who knows how the Skittles thing began or why, but anywho, it's just maddening. At this point, can we all agree that Kai Havertz shouldn't start this weekend? Like, there's in what shape or form does that guy start on Saturday?
For the 38th time, yes. He should not start next game.
But he will.
But I think he will still.
Oh, man. I am praying for something else. But we'll talk about the Wolves match later.
Yeah.
Like, who else ate Skittles? Oh, Marshawn Lynch. So that's a terrible.
I mean, but listen, and then the other comparison I brought up was like Meta World Peace sipping Henny at halftime and then balling out in the second half of his games. It's like, listen, for some people that shit works, but Marshawn Lynch and
for crazy Ron Artest people
are cut from a different cloth than you, Kai. I'm very, very sorry. Yeah.
They're polar opposites.
They're from another universe.
Talking about a string being versus beast mode. All right, well, positives. That's where this discussion started. We were supposed to list positives. Andreas, I'll start off with you. Or actually, I'm gonna go first.
Yeah, because go
I think
it.
I think this is the biggest positive. N'Golo Kanté looked incredible. 60-minute cameo or appearance.
Man of the match.
Man of the match. It's crazy to think that missing a world-class player like him all season would affect us so negatively. But he's back, hopefully, for the rest of the season at least, and then the next couple of years if we extend him. I don't know what we're going to do to make sure that that hamstring stays, but I know that one of the guys that Frank's bringing in, I forget his name, but I think he came originally to Chelsea during Mourinho's second stint, and then went to Everton with Frank, and now he's coming back.
Joe Edwards?
I think that's his name. He was head of training and fitness, so hopefully his insertion back into the team will have a positive effect on our crazy injury spell, but who knows? Zach, what positive did you draw from this match?
I mean, mine goes hand in hand with yours. It's that we got a clean sheet amidst the managerial sacking. Granted, Liverpool didn't have nearly their strongest side out on the pitch or nearly their strongest attack for that matter, but we defended well. I didn't think that there were any really clear opportunities where I can look back on and say, yeah, Liverpool probably should have scored that one. Whereas where you look back at our game and you say, yeah, maybe there's 3 or 4 opportunities where we probably could have nicked 2 or 3 goals. So, you know, on the whole, I did think we played better than them. And a big reason for that was how solid we were defensively. I'm on record saying that Cucurella was a bad choice going into the match, but, you know, he looked really solid. Completely shut down that left-hand side and supported Chilwell really well. And Fofana's comeback was incredible as well. I think that's the one player that we signed that I knew he was good, but I don't think I realized just how good he was. I think Fofana has a potential to be a top 5 center back in the world if he can stay healthy. But his one-on-one defending ability, the ability to carry the ball with his feet and dribble it into the midfield and pick out a pass. He even overlaps the wingback sometimes too, which is great. Threat on set pieces. He just kind of has it all. So, yeah, the defense was a big positive. But yeah, the Fofana thing is, I'm realizing it more than more. You know, $50 million. I even said that was a lot for a center back, but man,
I think it was more than that. It wasn't 50. It was I think 70. It was
worth more too. 80. Yeah, 80. Yeah, so 70 or 80. I mean, the $80 million is a fuck ton of money, guys. But if he can stay healthy. It's so worth it because you can't really find center backs like him very often.
I just love how he's always so willing to throw his body on the line, like inside the box. Like it's one of those things that we don't see very often anymore. We haven't seen that sort of thing consistently since like Terry and Cahill in their prime. Like Thiago Silva does it here and there, but even then we haven't seen that recently because he's been, well, to his own compliment, always at the right place at the right time, so he doesn't have to like slide tackle as much. To build off of what both of you guys had said, I thought the 3-5-2, the decision to go with three in midfield, was odd. But that midfield three, I felt like they dominated the midfield battle in what was probably, you know, something that we haven't seen in a while, something that we probably haven't trained properly and haven't really deployed in a Premier League match in recent history. So for Kovacic, Enzo and Conte to work together, I thought that was a very good first sort of viewing of that group. Would probably want to see a little bit more of a goal threat, but for what they were supposed to do in this match, I thought that they controlled the midfield battle.
I mean, I think the midfield three makes sense if you consider who we have to play forward, and none of them are in good form. None of them can finish, so you might as well bolster that midfield and pray we get a lucky goal and just kind of guarantee the clean sheet in a sense. But it doesn't matter, I think, at this point, two attackers, three attackers, four or five. If these guys can't put away the chances, what's the point? I think like playing Kovacic, Jorginho, and Enzo, those are three of our best and most important
Conte,
players.
You mean? Conte. Jorginho?
Did I say Jorginho? Oh my God.
Someone misses him.
It's Lampard's second time, not his first time here.
Right. Yeah, okay. Okay. Who else was on that team?
Willian was our captain.
Oh God.
We actually had strikers who could finish. We had Tammy Abraham and Ollie Giroud.
Yep.
Good and I think time, Tammy man. Was our leading scorer when he was in charge too. And
he
we
were
selling him, which is a little weird, but
good times. Okay, I guess that does it for the Liverpool discussion. I don't know how much more into it we want to get. I mean, obviously the two disallowed goals. It's just that is a perfect summary of this season. It's so tough. This year has been so tough as a Chelsea fan with all the off-field drama plus the on-the-field performance. It's been... Man, I am a fan of some pretty shitty teams, and I've experienced some pretty devastating and awful seasons with other teams, but this might be up there for one of the least enjoyable seasons I've ever had supporting a team. But hey, we push through because I have a podcast and I have to watch it, so. So after the match, the next 24 hours following the match, quite interesting. So a lot of discussions between who the next manager would be. Luis Enrique was apparently in London, prepared a pretty detailed presentation and presented it to the board and the rest of the decision makers at Chelsea who... were reportedly very impressed by what they saw and, you know, how much research he did. That's great. The board is apparently keen on Nagelsmann still. We'll see. This is not going to be a quick process. And, it's going to be the next coming up, the next coming weeks, we'll see something. There were whispers of Bruno not wanting to be at the interim role because, he was Graham Potter's guy and didn't feel right or what.
He said he didn't like being in charge on match day, which I think is very odd.
A cop out. And then completely out of left field, Frank Lampard's name comes out of nowhere. And now he is going to be our manager until June, and our next manager is not going to take over until the summer. I guess I'll just start off with like an open-ended question, and Andreas, I'll start off with you. Like, why now? What's the point of bringing in a Frank Lampard? And I mean, just like what's the logic and the reasoning behind this?
Well, first off, I think we were all pretty certain that when Potter was sacked, it meant that 48 hours later, aka today, we would have a new permanent manager. I don't think any of us expected it to take a U-turn and be a caretaker situation, much less be Lampard of all people. In our podcast Discord, everyone's like, whoa, Lampard was at the game. How nice of him. Like zero. Like it was a joke in the chat that he was there because he was going to be the next manager. It was never a serious discussion. But to be honest, I think the only reason this happens is because you had to take Potter out. And I think they expected Bruno to be more than willing to do this. And I guess the guy just didn't feel it. And you're right, he is Potter's guy, but at the same time, it sounds like his heart just wasn't in it. And Vord had to once again call it audible. And unfortunately for us, it's just poor planning. I think they should have had a much, better discussion with Bruno to feel him out before just saying that he was going to be the interim manager. They could have just said nothing, let Bruno take over for a day, and then do your business longer. I think, honestly, it's the only reason you bring Lampard in is the passion, trying to find a true motivator, someone that the team will actually look up to, per se. All the rumors now coming out that the players just didn't respect Potter at that level. They thought he was a great guy, just he was not a sort of,
he was out of his depth.
Yeah, out of his depth. Like, he's not like a dad. Like, you don't want to disappoint your dad kind of thing. Like, they're like, oh, whatever, Potter's cool. Like, yeah, whatever you say, dude. And they did their own thing. So I really think it's just a matter of bringing somebody that's going to express what it means to play for the badge going into the end of the season. And then my always optimistic conspiracy theorist brain tells me that, well, Lampard is probably not getting a head coach or a manager job anytime soon. Maybe the reason you bring Lampard is that the discussions with the next manager will be that Lampard can be a number two, and that Lampard's going to be doing the homework right now for the next manager going into next season. So maybe Lampard takes a step back from being the main guy, maybe learns from a quote-unquote elite manager at a high end like Chelsea, sort of like Arteta did with Pep. And so you bring him as your history, your again, the guy that can be the presence in the locker room that tells you what it's like to play for Chelsea without being the main voice tactically and the X's and O's in the long term. So the short answer is, he's been here before. He's a club legend. He can maybe get these guys riled up. The conspiracy theorist in me says that maybe Lampard is going to be part of the next guy's staff And that's something that the next guy's going to have to like agree upon, just because we don't have any true, like, through and through Chelsea blooded people in this team anymore. Aspie is on the way out, and he's the last guy from the previous generation. So those are my two things, Zach. I don't know how you're feeling in this right now.
I haven't seen or I haven't heard the conspiracy yet.
That's all me. That's the last brainwaves.
But that hasn't even crossed my mind, and that actually would make sense from the perspective of the owners, you know, having a plan. Okay, we're gonna bring Frank in, he'll be caretaker number two when the next guy comes in, and then he can just kind of learn from him and go from there. That is optimistic, I do have to say, but what my heart's telling me is that I mentioned this last podcast, or at least hinted it, the last pod before Potter got sacked, excuse me, but you know, I said they're in very dangerous territory if they continue with Potter, regardless of the fan discontent and regardless of the downturn in performances and on-field product and whatnot. And I think this move is a move to sort of rectify a little bit of that. You know, there are a lot of match day going fans that are going to love singing Frank's name the day of the match, and rightly so. Every Chelsea fan that goes to Stamford Bridge and sees Frank Lampard in the flesh should be screaming Super Frankie Lampard. But in terms of him coming back and coaching on an interim basis, I mean, he hasn't really done anything to deserve that. His first coaching stint here, his first season was good. I mean, obviously, he kept the club afloat, transfer ban, everything. We'll forever be grateful for him for that. And I think the team overperformed that season in a really big way. The following season, the wheels kind of fell off. You saw some of his tactical deficiencies, some of his man management deficiencies. Let's not forget, he's the same manager that froze Rudiger out for the longest time some weird reason that we still don't know. But beside the point, I feel like this signing is more to appease the fans than anybody. I don't think it's a signing that they brought in to sort of say, okay, guys, let's win a couple games and finish the season on a high. Season's done. I mean, let's be completely honest. There really is only the Champions League. And this is not a knock on the manager per se, but it doesn't really matter who we have in charge. If we're playing in a knockout phase in a Champions League, the players are going to turn up.
Exactly.
So it's not like you need to have an elite world-class manager to do the job in the Champions League. Look at Robbie Di Matteo. Tuchel is an outlier because he's world-class, but Di Matteo is a good case in point. So for me, on one hand, the fan in me is excited to see Frank back. I'm happy to see that he got another job. It does feel like Chelsea is doing him a little bit of a favor, because this stint for him is going to be a free hit to sort of recoup whatever reputation he lost in the Premier League. Because let's be honest, the wheels fell off at Everton with him, and the only way it looked like it was going was the Championship. So I think this was probably the next best opportunity he can get. He's obviously going to tear his left arm off for it, which he did. And, you know, we just got to kind of wait and see what happens. I think the players will react. I think we'll get a couple good performances out of them. I think the Champions League won't be an issue in terms of getting the players to put forth the effort and to just kind of give us some sort of performance to celebrate, whether we win, lose, or draw.
And you talk about Champions League real quick. I want to just harp on that. Like, during Potter's tenure, I wanted to give him all the credit for the Champions League. But then when you look at the big picture, it's like, I take it back. I think it's all players, because how can you be so good in Champions League and so bad in the Premier League and praise the coaching? So to me, it's the typical thing with the players. These players get up for Champions League. They try extremely hard for Champions League. Something about playing on Wednesday nights, they get a huge boner and they go out there and fucking kill it. And so now you have Lampard, which means the stadium's going to be rocking, because like you said, fans want to sing Lampard's name. At least this brightens the atmosphere a little bit going into a very hard match against Madrid.
Well, it is a personality shakeup emotionally too. And a criticism we all had of Potter was that he wasn't necessarily the most
charismatic
manager, a charismatic manager. Yeah, that's a better word for it. But Lampard's as charismatic as it gets.
The media loves him, surprisingly, even as a Chelsea manager.
Well, the media loves him, and rightly so. I mean, he speaks really well on camera. He holds his composure really well when he's getting asked the tough questions. I mean, he's been getting asked the tough questions for the better part of 20 years now, if you include his playing career. But, you know, I don't know, man. I feel like I'm in the middle. I'm excited to see him back, but at the same time, it's so underwhelming because, like you touched on earlier, Andres, it just reeks of not having a backup plan. Like, it really, all those reports that we heard of when Potter was still in charge, that the board are still with him, there's zero plans to sack him, there's no, as the motorcycle gang passes by, there's no backup plan or plan B, per se, if Potter does get sacked, and now it's been proven. I mean, there really isn't a plan B. If there was, we would have hired the caretaker and announced the full-time manager already. Instead, we have to wait till Bald Potter 2.0 and Bruno says that he doesn't want to manage the team after the match, and now all of a sudden we're scrambling to look for a replacement. So I don't know. It does reek of very poor preparation, and it's sad because why the fuck did we instill a board of directors? We scrambled for it to put them in place as soon as possible after hiring Potter. And now,
see, that's another mistake by the board then. Or by the owners. They should have had the board before hiring Potter altogether.
The owners are very, very culpable. And it's not to say that just this ownership is, because if you look at last ownership, yeah, we won a lot of trophies and everything. But the problems that we have now that persist today were there yesterday, in a sense, right? Abramovich never went out and bought that striker after Diego Costa. He tried. We bought Lukaku, but that didn't work out very well.
Right.
Maybe Potter's tenure goes a little differently if we have a prolific 15 to 20 goal a season striker leading the line.
And I think I joked about that in our group text too. It's like, I blame Lukaku for this, and because you know, we're stuck with just Kai because Lukaku is Lukaku. But
we spent 90 million on him to,
and then he sucks nothing. And jumps ship, and then, you know, we get our hopes up for Broja, and then we know what happened to his knee. It's just, again, Lukaku can never step foot in the stadium ever again. But but yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you, Zach. It's like a weird feeling. Like, I'm not thrilled, but at least I feel like watching the game, there should be a change. Like, at least we'll see the stadium. Like, it was so fun to watch the Dortmund match and actually hear our fans.
Yeah.
And during the Liverpool match, there was kind of a couple times where I heard the fans, and I thought, okay, maybe it's because Potter's gone, but now with Lampard. So I don't know if you agree that you think maybe we'll get a better just atmosphere and the players might react to it.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't understand the logic behind it when the season is pretty much a lost season. The only thing we have to play for is Champions League. And I don't know. It's a classic, you know, chicken or the egg situation. And you guys already talked about it, whether, you know, it's the manager or the players who, you know, finally they get up for the Champions League and not during the you know, regular league matches. But I don't know. I mean, I just think, like, if you look at the first two Champions League matches that we had with Thomas Tuchel as manager, it was against Salzburg and I forget who else, some other shitty team. I think we lost both, or we drew one and lost one.
Yeah.
And then when Graham Potter came, you know, two wins in a row against Milan, then we beat those two teams again. We beat Dortmund. Like, how come the players weren't getting up when Thomas Tuchel was in charge for these Champions League games? I do think that the manager has something to do with it.
I agree. I think, but the context of the beginning of the season under Tuchel was trash, right? Like, we know how beat up mentally these guys were playing under Tuchel, how negative they felt. Like, he ran these attackers' minds into the ground where they didn't know what to do, and it just felt like there was no spark or whatever. And then Potter gets to play. He actually drew one of those games. I can't remember against who, but it was like a 1-1 draw. Regardless, beating Milan twice back-to-back, add some context, new manager bounce, right? That's going to happen no matter what. The attackers were kind of given some freedom. And then Milan also had like 7 injuries that first match. No Teo, no Bennacer, no, like, we got a little bit lucky with the first Milan game. Then the second Milan game, we got an early penalty. Did Tomori get a red card? I can't remember what
yeah, he did.
Something like that. So I think there's those two. The Milan matches were supposed to be highlights, yes. And then the Dortmund one, I mean, I don't know what tactics. Like, that one, I feel like it's an elimination game. And it was like, well, nobody believes in us. Dortmund's the hottest team in Europe. And we just, again, we just thrive when a team wants to play open and we can just counter. Like, we kind of like overthink it if we're possessing our way into their final third versus just 50 miles an hour. You know, everyone's just boom, 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 counter, counter, counter. So I get it. I'm not going to discredit the manager completely, but at the same time, it's like, I find it hard to believe that I should credit the manager more for those when he couldn't beat Southampton or, you know, sure, West Ham and things like that.
My main point is, okay, listen, like, I'm not upset about sacking, you know, Graham Potter. I thought that he should have been out. But if you don't have a replacement in line, why do it mid-season? It just doesn't make a difference. To do it until at the end of the season. I guess it doesn't make a difference either way. So it's not like doing that is better or worse than having him finish off the season. It's just, I don't know. It just seems like for a ownership group which has undergone so much scrutiny, and some of it rightly deserved. That, you know, like, you're talking about how Graham Potter was out of his depth. Like, sometimes these owners seem like they're out of their depth dealing with a, you know, completely new sport. But, you know, I don't know. I just, it doesn't look good, I don't think. And, you know, like, the whole idea, sorry, I just wanted this one more point, something you guys brought up earlier about bringing in Frank so that he can be the next guy or the second guy under the next manager. Like, why are we deciding who the assistants are going to be for the next manager? I mean, don't we want the manager to handpick exactly who he wants? I mean, we're going to have to force Frank Lampard again on him? I mean, the only reason to do that is to appease to the fans. That's like, that's pandering.
But that's not unusual. I mean, Anthony Barry was like, Tuchel came in and Chelsea's like, we're keeping Anthony Barry. And we've done this before. Like, we would fire managers.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But we would fire managers, and Steve Holland was always the second guy. Like, I think, like, there are some managers who historically have their number two, and that is their guy. And no matter where they go, they have their number two. Like, Mourinho for the longest time had Rui Faria, I think was his name. Yeah. And then Ancelotti had his son. Conte had his brother. Like, there's those people. Like, totally agreed. Like, you're right. But at the same time, like, an assistant manager is like a
cheerleader.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, he's just like, okay, I agree here, whatever. Yeah, and there's so many other coaches that the next guy's going to bring as well. To where you have a staff of 10, if you have the one guy that's sort of like the link between the players and the club itself and the club culture, like, I don't see that as an awful thought. Again, it's very much like me trying to make sense of it all. And for all I know, Lampard's already, like, his agent's already thinking next job. Like, who knows? But I really just don't get it. Like you said, there's nothing to play for. I get it. It's one of those where, like, I see both sides, like Nagelsmann or Enrique, like, they could come in and start work today. But I also think that if you're a new manager coming in, you want to have a completely blank slate. You want to have multiple weeks of training where you can get your stuff across without having to stop, travel, play. Like,
Tuchel did that in one Champions League.
Tuchel simplified. Sure, but he simplified the tactics. Yeah. He said, nobody's going to score on us. We'll figure out the rest. Like he said, I'm going to a back three.
I'm going to make us really hard to score against.
Yeah, and that's kind of same thing with like you even hear Sean Dyche say stuff like that when he gets hired. Like he's like, I'm not a defensive coach, but when I get hired, I usually need to not lose games first. So yeah. It just makes no sense because here's the thing. The thing I'm most afraid of, because Lampard, no matter what, even us, we're back and forth whether we're okay with it or not. He's a club legend. And what if these guys react to Lampard and we have a fantastic end of the season? You know there's going to be crazy fans out there in a big, loud section that's going to want him long term. And that, to me, is the worst thing that could happen. Sorry,
I agree.
I think you're gonna have that group of fans anyways.
So that's the part that's tough. It's play devil's advocate. You bring this adored guy back. It's like when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he had a good few weeks one season, and then managed all of United. It's like, this is our dude. You have fucking Ferdinand saying, "Oh, Ole at the wheel," and then they fucking crash and burn. I don't need the attachment to make.
You can draw this a better hard comparison. Frank's first tenure with the club.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I mean, but Frank was in first place for a while that second season. Like, let's not forget, until November rolled around, we were in first place with Frank.
Yeah, and that's what I've been trying.
And then we dropped dead and went to ninth place.
See, we never let Zach talk on the podcast. See. You know what, Zach? Here, have the floor.
The ship failed a while ago. No, it's
you're free to speak. I always do this, man.
It's different. It's different from the Solskjaer situation because Frankie has experience in the Premier League now. So it's not like we're hiring some guy that came from Molde or wherever the hell Solskjaer came from. I don't think it's fair to draw that comparison. But in terms of the club adoration and the fan adoration, and of course you're going to have some bias from a certain group of fans, and wanting that guy to stay long term. Yeah, but I think that noise is going to be there regardless. I think that it just comes with the territory of hiring a guy like Frank Lampard. I don't think it has much to do with the results. Obviously, if we beat Real Madrid, those voices are going to get louder and they're going to be front and center. But I think we're going to hear those voices between now and the end of the season, regardless of the results. I mean, after our first win, we'll probably hear those voices. But the main thing is, and this is the one reason why I'm kind of on the fence about this, in terms of my gut wants to tell me that this is negative because there's no planning. You know, it seems like a spur of the moment kind of move. It seems like something just to kind of appease us between now and the end of the season. But the positive side is saying, okay, there's obvious positives of Frank coming back and injecting life into this club. But all the reports that we've read, everything has been consistent in saying that it's a temporary basis. So yeah, that means both parties fully understand that it's on a temporary basis. So Frank's not signing that contract without fully understanding what he's about to get himself into. And it does feel like the club is helping Frank, and Frank is also helping the club at the same time. Like, we're both kind of helping each other. We're going up to Frank and saying, here's a free hit for the next X amount of games. You try to recoup some of that reputation that you lost at Everton, and hopefully you get a Premier League job next year. And then on the other hand, Frank is saying, yeah, well, I'll help you guys, and I'll, you know, help you cross the line at the end of this season and just get you to the finish line, and that's about it. So if that understanding is concrete and is true and it's withheld on both sides, I have no problem with bringing in Frank right now. But
look,
if what Andres says is true and the fans start getting a little louder, ownership has shown that they're rash enough to where we can't really predict what they're thinking. They might have a complete 180 in their train of thought between now and the end of the season and might start thinking, oh shit, well, you know, but here's the negative side again creeping in. Exactly. So this is why I keep going back and forth. But I do think the fact that the only thing we've read is that it's on a temporary basis is a good thing. I don't think Frank is going to, you know, try and slot and sneak his way into the managerial post here. I don't think that's what he expects either. I think what he's expecting is to just maybe put together a couple good performances and regain the faith of some ownership around the rest of the league, and maybe go to a team like a Leicester or another mid to bottom table team next season.
Two final thoughts just on, like, the why he was hired. So, now that I think about it, I'm sure that we'll already have an agreement in place with the manager for next season before it would get to a point where Frank That's would be fair. Winning so much.
Completely and, fair.
You know, like, so, we'll already, by that point, we'll already have our manager selected, and he's going to be, you know, reach an agreement, and you know, maybe there will be something that they, you know, renege on the agreement and they keep Frank. I don't think anything like that probably is going to happen. But the other thought is if you know, you're going to the situation and you know, you start off with the caretaker being someone from within the organization, and this guy is saying he doesn't want the job anymore, then you have to go find someone from the outside. Which manager is out there that A, is going to take this position that's better than Frank? And is there, and again, like, is there anyone else like that you can think of? Like, you know, it's not like there was a candidate that I could have totally seen that was clearly a better decision than Frank to be a caretaker for the rest of the season. Yeah. So, you know, like if they had to act quick. They had to act quick. I'm with Zach here, where I'm flipping back and forth. Like, my mind makes one argument and then it makes an argument against it, and it's just going back and forth. So I think ultimately, like, my conclusion is that it's neither bad or good, really.
Right.
It's just like a thing that happened.
Yeah, and the other thing to put into perspective too, because people are gonna look around and compare, like, well, Bayern fired Nagelsmann and got Tuchel in 48 hours later. Well, the difference here is that was during international break, so they could have meetings back and forth nonstop, no training in the middle to make that decision. Number two, Bayern has everything to play for. So as a manager coming in midway through the season, that's far more appealing than, hey, you have a couple days to prepare for Madrid. And that's the only thing you've got left. If you lose to Madrid, it's done. It's curtains. And then, of course, there's already familiarity between Tuchel and Bayern, like, for years. We have never been linked, or at least done our due diligence on the two elite managers that are still available in Nagelsmann and Luis Enrique. So you're right, though. There's only 60 days left in the season. Who else was going to do it? Once Bruno jumped ship, it's kind of hard to find a guy to get us there. So yeah, who knows? Maybe it's, again, it sucks that we're here. And I think that's just kind of why we can't, like, buy in. I don't know. It's just, I never expected year one of the Boldy tenure to be as wild and hectic and, yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane what's going on right now. But enough of talking about the decision of why. Let's kind of envision what it's going to look like for the rest of the season. Under Super Frank, I guess we can, like, kind of talk about winners and losers of Lampard being hired. As far as, like, the players, Zach, I'll start off with you. Who do you view as a loser in this situation?
For me, it's Kepa. This was not one of, or this wasn't Frank Lampard's preferred goalkeeper choice. So obviously I pick him. I still think he's going to be playing. I know Mendy's been dealing with injuries and whatnot, but should Mendy come back at some point between now and the end of the season, we might see Frank even give him a shot and maybe a chance to get back into the team. And who knows what that can do for his potential contract situation, depending on the next manager that comes in. You know, we could see the talks resume for Mendy, possibly. It's definitely not off of the table completely. So for me, it's Kepa. There's not really any other names that are glaringly obvious. So, yeah, I'll just stick with that one for now.
Andreas.
Say João Felix. Lampard's known for playing the 4-3-3. João Felix likes to be deployed more centrally. So there is a possibility where he's either forced out of position or perhaps chosen behind, or not chosen, because Lampard may go with one of his favorites from his previous tenure. So I fear that, you know, if we were to switch to a traditional 4-3-3 with super wide wingers, which is true wingers, which is what Lampard did his first time around, it could sort of affect Felix in a negative way when he's been kind of our creative hub recently.
Yeah, and I didn't really think of like who would be a loser in this situation. I guess like you could say maybe Enzo might, because if he's going to be playing a 4-3-3 every match, I don't know if Enzo will have the freedom to move to push forward as much as he has in the current system. You know, I'm not sure if anyone really loses. I think Zach's answer of Kepa is probably the only one, because Kepa really only took over because Graham Potter, like, he needs a keeper who can play with the ball at his feet. And, you know, of course, not just that. Mendy also kind of, his form fell off a cliff, but I think I could definitely see a situation occur where Kepa loses his starting spot this year. Winners, I think there's one glaring obvious winner in this situation, and it's a guy that hasn't even played in the past month, surprisingly. Zach, you want to maybe talk about him?
Yeah, I think it's Mason Mount. That's the obvious one. Going to Andres's point, you know, Frank likes to play 4-3-3, and if that's the case, then Mason Mount's definitely coming back into the side if he's healthy and available. He understands exactly what needs to be done of him, and has played under Frank longer than any of the other players in the side, if you take into account his time at Derby as well. So yep, that's a guy that Frank has leaned on. I have absolutely no problems if Frank does decide to lean on him, because it's tried and trusted. Let's not forget, when Frank was in charge of Chelsea the first time around, Mason Mount was arguably one of our most important players, if not the most important, in terms of the way we played. And this was the Mason Mount that we were talking about being a potential world beater, central midfield genius, under Frank. And then, you know, the wheels did fall off a little bit towards the end of Tuchel, and obviously with Potter, but yeah, I think Mount's definitely going to come back into the team. I think he's going to get a chance to play again, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of performances he turns out, because it's obviously been a tough year for him on the pitch and off the pitch with the contract situation. But, you know, I'm curious to see if he'll get a boost by Frank coming in, and see if he'll want to play himself back into those negotiations, maybe try and play himself into a position where Chelsea would be willing to offer him more money. Maybe he could convince ownership that he's worth the price, the money that he's asking, or the terms that he's asking. Who knows? But one thing is for certain, and that's that Mason Mount will be integrated back into the team at some point.
And the Mason Mount thing, it's like he quietly, like I just said, quietly has not played. He did not play at all in the month of March. I'm pretty sure he had zero appearances. He played 0 minutes.
That tells you everything you need to know about the type of season he had. I mean, it's been forgettable.
But I think what at least this is what I was calling for, was to sit him a couple matches to get his head straight, and this kind of extended into him being phased out of the squad, and I didn't want that to happen. Because, again, we've seen what Mason Mount can do. Maybe Frank does instill that confidence back in him, and we start seeing the Mason Mount of old. Who knows? Andreas, who do you think is a winner?
I'm going with Mudryk and Madueke. Again, going back to the fact that Lampard plays like actual out-and-out wingers, it would be a chance for these two guys to go back to what they know and feel comfortable in their transition into the Premier League. Again, there's nothing to play for. So maybe Lampard will have the balls to play those guys a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, again, the 4-3-3 just kind of falls right in line to what they like to do. They can start wide, dribble 1v1, cut inside, and they'll have plenty of support with, you know, what would be Reece James on the right and Ben Chilwell on the left overlapping them. So I think that these two guys can finally start seeing some more of the pitch and build some confidence by playing out wide.
Yeah, and I think to that same effect, Sterling will likely be a winner in this as well. We might see him play striker a couple of matches this season. I know. I mean, what do you guys think his Frank's opinion on Kai Havertz is? I mean, he was manager when we bought him, right?
He bought Kai. He convinced Kai to come. Much. Yeah.
So, you know, obviously he was a fan of him before. He managed him before, and obviously the season that Kai Havertz has had, he's just not a striker. That's we've already established this. In a 4-3-3, I don't see what role he plays in that formation. If he were to play, it would be at striker, but I don't know. Like, do you guys think we'll see Sterling play at striker this season?
I mean, we might have to. Again, after this midweek match, I hope to God that was the breaking point, because it was such a winnable game, and you can argue single-handedly Kai Havertz kept us from doing that. So I get it that Lampard's going to probably come in short term, has like short week, I mean, in terms of what he gets to do at Cobham. So we may be stuck, but God, I hope we see Sterling false nine, Joao Felix false nine. I mean, Lampard saw Sterling do that. I mean, he's been managing, and Sterling was doing that a bit at City. So hopefully he can try to mimic that or something, because it's just gotten to that point, man.
Did they play together at City? Are there 10 years overlap? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No. I didn't mean as teammates. Before. I meant like him as a manager watching tape of Sterling. I did not mean them as teammates.
I think the Kai argument you're making, obviously, I would love for that to happen. If I'm the manager, I'm not starting his ass one more game this season. But honestly, I think the solution, if Frank is going to stick to the 4-3-3, he's going to bring Mount back in at some point. But play Joao Felix at the false nine. Let him just kind of go as he pleases. If we're not going to play we obviously don't have that recognized out-and-out striker. Who knows if Lampard will even look at Dr. Fofana or not. I hope he does, because he did look a little... He looked livelier than Kai did for the one half he played. But if we're not going to be playing with Dr. Fofana, I definitely don't want Kai there. And then at that point, let's just go and commit fully to the false nine and just have those wingers, like Andres said, have the Madueke's, have the Sterlings, have the Mudryk's running in behind. Even Pulisic, who was great under Lampard. He scored a lot of goals under Frank. Probably had his best season in a Chelsea shirt under Frank, too, during the pandemic. Those guys would probably be the stars of the show, similar to what Liverpool does, where they don't have a recognized number nine in the classic sense. Instead, they just have two goal scoring wingers with tons of pace and finishing ability. So maybe that could be the solution for now, at least. You know, it's still. I'm not going to say that by switching to that, all of a sudden we're going to start finding goals here, there, and everywhere, because this team has shown that they're completely. The goals are not in this team. This group of players just simply does not have the goals in them. But I think you could find some goals by changing things up and going for alternatives other than just rinse and repeat with the same Kai bullshit every single week.
Do you guys have any expectations at all for the rest of the season? I have none. For Frank, like...
No, I don't have any, and I think that's why I'm kind of hopeful in a way. Not hopeful that things are going to turn around and all of a sudden we're going to be the Chelsea of old, but just hopeful that we're going to get a reaction from the players, from the club. Like, I think we will see some sort of uptick in the level of performance, but it's not going to be something that's blatantly obvious or, you know, we're not going to turn it up three notches. We're going to turn it up a half a notch, I think.
I expect the fans to cheer on Lampard.
Yeah.
But I also expect them to be even harsher on the players now, because they can't scapegoat booing Potter and getting mad at Potter anymore. So I expect the boos to come for some of the guys that have been, you know, especially Kai Havertz. Like I'm not hoping that it does. I'm just saying I think it will. I think players missing big chances or players having a bad performance is going to lead to a lot of fan discontent or vocal, you know, not being too happy.
Kai was getting booed last game already.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
rightfully so.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I expect. I'm never one for booing the players while they're. I don't like booing individual players unless it's like a Lukaku situation where they just fucking hate the club and they're just, you know, trying to act like terrorists within the club. That's basically what Lukaku did. I mean, he dropped the nuke in the middle of Cobham with that interview. But,
yeah,
you know, with Havertz, it's different because it, like, things are just not coming off for him. It's not like he's talking shit in the media or flirting with other clubs. Or complaining about the manager, or complaining about the team. No, he's actually saying, I love it here. My girlfriend loves it here. The Skittles here are way better than in Germany. Like, you know, he's saying all this shit. It's weird. It's so weird. Because if you are happy here, you would think the performances would follow. They usually go hand in hand when somebody's happy where they're at. But
maybe he's comfortable. Like, I feel like he was just, like, comfortable with his position and...
I think that's his personality, though, based on the way he plays, too. He just likes to be comfortable. He doesn't really get out of his comfort zone much.
No results, just vibes. Okay, so in 3 days, well, by the time this episode comes out, in 2 days, we've got a matchup against Wolves. I mean, what do you expect to see out of that match? Will you be distraught if we don't win this match?
I think we're going to win this match. That's the thing. Like,
exactly. Call so me will you crazy. Be distraught if we don't?
No, there's nothing left in the season. I will not be distraught of anything anymore. Like, there's nothing to be distraught about this season. The injury, a long-term injury for a player. That's the only thing that can have those feelings. Right.
Nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. So right now, I think the team's just better than Wolves. I know Wolves also has, I think, two players with a red card going into the match. I think Neves and some other starter is also suspended. So, I mean, I want to win. I hope we can win something. I want to feel again. Like, I was trying to do the math. Like, when was the last time? Like, if either of you even remember that Chelsea scored 4 goals in a match and it wasn't against Norwich.
I have no idea.
Like, it feels like so long ago since we actually scored. Like, Liverpool scored 7 on United not too long ago. Like, when is it our turn?
We've been asking for that almost every week this season, and it just hasn't come true.
Yeah.
Zach, I mean... Wolves right now, they're 2 points clear of relegation. Which, by the way, this relegation battle is going to be juicy. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams in this relegation battle to end the season. It's going to be absurd. But, I mean, does that kind of give Wolves fans a little bit of hope that, you know, like the relegation scrap, they have more to play for than us?
You would think that the players would be playing for their pride, like Andres just said. I mean, if you have a head on your shoulders and you're one of those players in the dressing room,
you got two guys fired.
You can't be oblivious to the fact that you just got two managers. Exactly. You got two guys sacked in the same season. So you got to take a long, hard, every single player needs to take a long, hard look at themselves and say, okay, this is a clean slate now. I need to take between now and the end of the season and give it absolutely 110%. Because there's a couple different reasons why. Like, nobody's future is safe, first of all, outside of the new signings that we just brought in. And to be fair to them, they haven't been playing enough. Guys like Badiashile, Mudryk, Madueke, if you throw Fofana in there too, they haven't been playing enough. I think Enzo and Fofana, the defender Fofana. I'm getting both of them confused now.
But I thought you were going to say Jorginho.
They're the only ones that are new signings that have really played week in and week out and have been, you know, given the time that they need. So the rest of those guys, I'm talking about Kovacic, I'm talking about Mount, I'm talking about the Conor Gallaghers, I'm talking about the Loftus-Cheeks of the world, all those other guys that have been in and around the club for a while now, this is their chance to sort of restake their claim in the team. Otherwise, whether it's Nagelsmann, Enrique, whoever else comes in, they're going to look at this team at the end of the season and start crossing names off saying, okay, this guy didn't perform, this guy didn't perform, this guy didn't perform. But I also think if you're a new manager coming in, you have to look at the way these players perform between now and the end of the season and consider that when you're looking at their character in terms of who you want on your team next season as well. So this is going to, it's a huge character test for these guys. I mean, for lack of a better word, I mean, this is just really going to show what they're made of. The guys who give a fuck are going to show it, and the guys who don't aren't. It's that simple at this point.
All right, a lot of mixed emotions. Not sure how to feel right now. Hoping for the best, not expecting much. But I think that does it. I think we spent a good amount of time talking about this crazy situation. All gave some pretty decent takes. If you don't follow us already on Twitter, make sure you do. We're at Roman or at Blues on Parade.
Oh man. Ooh, first time in a while,
throwback,
baby.
Throwback. We had another episode where I think this was the most questions we ever got on a tweet, but they were all about Bruno and, like, you know, what to expect for the rest of the season. So again, those questions became irrelevant shortly after the match ended. So, sorry again to those of you who wrote in. I promise, next week, if you write in, your question will be answered live on the show. Unless something else crazy happens, who knows? I mean, the way that this season's been going, I can't guarantee that something crazy won't happen. But yeah. Until then, until next this next Sunday, keep the blue flag flying high.